Hello, movie goers. This is Patrick Hickey Jr., editor-in-chief of ReviewFix.com, joined by
senior editor Ilga Privman
and staff writer Brett Allen,
the only one without a British accent, as ReviewFix at the movie discusses
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes. So what do we think of Sherlock Holmes, Brett?
Well, I liked it. I didn't know it was a Guy Ritchie film. It didn't. Afterwards, certain like the fighting scenes and some of that stuff are Guy Ritchie-esque, like they're similar to the scenes in Snatch, but really cohesive, and they didn't leave a whole lot of loose ends. Most of the characters are introduced and then fleshed out. There's not a whole lot of this, oh, here's this guy, okay, we'll see him again later, 3 hours, you know, or maybe we won't. Yeah. So I thought it was, it flowed nicely, and they, towards the end, you think they're leaving out a major part, and they're like, oh, wait, no, we'll explain that too.
I don't know, what you're talking about right there as far as them, like, adding things later on in the movie, that kind of reminded me of the first, like, two good Saw movies, how they, like, kind of, like, went back at the end to kind of put all the pieces back together.
Or Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, absolutely. Those damn kids, you know? Yeah, but they absolutely did it that way to the point where, like, you kind of knew after, I would say, the first, like, half hour that they were eventually going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you actually find out what happened, it made it really enjoyable. So, what about you, Olga? What did you
think? I thought it was riveting. I especially enjoyed the fact that I couldn't figure out whether or not they were playing Rocky Road to Dublin for about 5 minutes. I was actually literally thinking about that the entire time.
Well,
during the fight scene, the first fight scene. Rocky Road to Dublin.
Is that like an ice cream flavor?
No.
Like that?
That's that song she likes, and then there was a bunch of Irish people singing it.
Oh, yeah,
playing.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
okay.
That was Rocky Road
to
Dublin.
Let's sing it a little bit. Let's hear it.
On the Rocky Road to Dublin. I can't match pitch.
Dutta Dutta is Gaelic for
really?
No.
Nice. Well, no characters in the movie, unfortunately, no characters in the movie had giant breasts.
So it
automatically, the highest it can get now is a 9.
Yeah.
You have to knock off 1 point because of that. But as far as the actors go, Olga, what did you think of Mr. Downey Jr.?
I thought he was fantastic. I also loved Jude Law.
Yeah.
And was that Sienna Miller?
No.
Who was she?
Mary Reilly.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, you mean, for the main...
For Irene Adler.
For Irene, yeah, you're right.
Who shares a name with Destiny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was actually wondering if one inspired the other.
Mary Reilly was Jude Law's fiance. She was pretty good, too.
No, not the other one.
The main...
Oh,
yeah, the brunette, yeah. She was great. I thought she was hilarious.
She was fantastic.
I think the film, like, the ambiance of the film was, like, incredibly British. It was very witty.
Very clever.
Very clever.
And I thought it was funny how they said very clever to him as a resurrecting.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely
fantastic. The very dry wit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of funny moments, but understated funny moments, which is enjoyable.
Absolutely.
I don't have any analysis on the way they speak. I'm not a master of old English. The one thing I did like was Robert Downey Jr. He is himself, but he's separate enough from the character where you don't feel like you're watching him.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, I was thinking the movie was reminding me of Johnny Depp, I guess, because he did it from Hell,
which
is vaguely similar.
Yeah.
Like, where the problem I have with Johnny Depp is he's got too many characters that are similar, so it was nice that he didn't just, like, do, like, okay, I'll do Tony Stark, but, like, 100 years in the past.
Yeah.
He wasn't overly flamboyant. And they actually made Holmes, instead of the really dry, overly snobby, they kind of made him
action-packed,
manic.
Yeah, super quirky.
Yeah, you're almost waiting for him to be a little like OCD, and like, which was the opposite. But his character, you were almost waiting for him to like wash his hands every 10 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's incredibly obsessive.
It's kind of like someone like put like, you know, Tony Stark with Monk and like Kojak, but gave him a British accent, you know. And like, yeah, when I think of this character, I think of like Controlled Chaos, because he has all these problems and all these things that could go wrong, but he always finds a way to kind of buck up and, like, put everything together and, like, save the day, you know?
I thought it was great that they made him the polar opposite of Watson, because he has this organized mess, like you said, but Watson's very neat.
Yeah.
He's very controlled.
Yeah.
So I thought they worked very well together as a pair. They had a lot of chemistry.
I think that was a great scene, too, when when he was breaking down Watson in front of Watson's fiancé.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was a great scene. As far as the chemistry between Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. go, I thought it was very good, even mm-hmm. though, like, in the writing, it was a bit, like, they were kind of in love with each other instead of loving each other. It felt that way at times. Maybe it's just like a British thing, because British men are very, very comfortable in their masculinity and the fact that
they couldn't show each other affection toward the end. Do you remember that?
Yeah, they couldn't do that. No. But as far as like the way they speak and the way their relationship, the way their relationship plays out and things like that, they're extremely, extremely close. Like, even more so than like brothers in a way. They are like in effect, like a pair when you think about it, because you can't imagine one without the other.
No.
Yeah, the chemistry in the movie was excellent. They played off each other very well. It was just good. Compared to some of the previews for that movie, what was that, the Bruce Willis movie?
Yeah.
That looked funny. But you could tell off right at the bat, like, this is not the best matchup, him and the
Tracy
black guy.
Yeah, Tracy Morgan and Bruce Willis. This is definitely not, you do not see a Dudley Boys-esque combination like this in Sherlock Holmes, like you said, Brett.
Yeah, like, they play off each other very well. It never, it's not predictable, too.
Yeah.
Like, there's a bunch of things in the movie, I'm like, oh, here we go. Like, I almost got turned off in the first fight scene, because I'm like, why is he doing kung fu? And then when they broke it down into that, like, oh, I'm going to scientifically, you know, 85 degree angle, dodge this, break the female, like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, the fight scenes, that's a great point that you made. The fight scenes were incredibly enjoyable, and it was... I think Guy Ritchie is the kind of guy that loves, like, fast action scenes, like, hard-hitting, but he kind of, like, managed to take a step back in a way, associate himself with the source material, and then say, like, okay, let's make this as cool as possible. And he made Sherlock Holmes a badass, but a huge goddamn nerd at the same time. Yeah. And he managed to combine them perfectly.
And he could have got lost in a couple of instances, like, where they have the Chinese guy in the end, who knows kung fu and is kicking his ass. Like, they could have ran with that and turned it into a big, like, mano-a-mano fight scene, and said he was just getting his ass kicked, and he starts asking for someone to shoot the Chinese guy.
Which is great, you know?
Shoot him, please!
It works perfectly right in with the wit and humor that Downey Jr. is famous for.
Yeah.
So.
No, I'm sorry. I actually thought the fight scenes, the breaking down of the fight scenes is very reflective of a graphic novel.
Yeah, absolutely.
They do it exactly like that. That's how they break them down, and it almost feels like you're watching a graphic novel in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now, I'm going to fracture him here, and then I'm going to do this. I don't know. I've read a lot of graphic novel fight scenes, so.
I thought, away from the fighting and things like that, I think the score was incredible, just because, like, the violin during, like, his times of intense thought, and the violin, like, during the fighting scenes, how it slows down, speeds up, and things like that. I mean, it's a simple, simple, like, plot device. And in a sense, I mean, the score, in a way, is its own character, because it just totally fueled the events of the movie.
They didn't do what a lot of English, turn-of-the-century, Victorian-era-centric movies do, which is, like, get a lot of Celtic music and play it really fast and loud, and which it gets a little distracting at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, not everything that takes place in England has to have the Dropkick Murphys in the background. Like, it works in The Departed, but, like, they didn't go apeshit with that in this direction. It was, like you said, it was subtle, and it fit the scenes. It wasn't distracting, and it set everything nicely.
Okay, awesome. What did you think, Olga, of the music?
I thought the music set everything off really well, and like Brett said, they only had the really fast Celtic music once, and I think it made its point, and I think it was done impeccably, so I was actually very fond of the score.
Okay.
I might go listen to it.
Let's see. I love the rest of the cast. I love the fact that the wrestling fan in me is, like, gushing right now. They got Kurgan, this guy from the WWF in, like, the late 90s. He's, like, this big, huge guy with black hair and a goatee.
Oh, is that who that is?
Horrible, horrible wrestler. Yeah, he was in the what's it called, the Oddities.
Who did he play?
He played the big, like,
The French guy.
Big French guy, yeah. And this guy has, like, I thought he was dead or something. Like, he has not been, like, in movies or anything like that for a really long time. He hasn't been on WWE in a really long time. And he was really good.
Yeah, he was good.
He was just, like,
he
a one-man ass-kicking machine. And he was fun at the same time.
He actually had a personality, which is unusual in a big guy.
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking of, like, going back to the Kevin Nash fight for
the
Punisher.
The same thing.
But while, I mean, that was a cool scene, but there was no personality to the character so much. This guy actually had a same thing. They wrote the wit into his dialogue about when, you know, like, give me a moment as he's staggering back up from getting shot.
And he takes the hat off and he's like, did you miss me? You know, kind of thing.
That was funny. I didn't expect that.
Absolutely. Like, I think it's kind of hard sometimes when you have characters that are as witty and charismatic as Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. to kind of balance that out with the rest of the cast, because they can, in effect, make the rest of the cast look really boring.
Yeah.
But
they didn't.
But they did it because
they amplified them.
The rest of the cast, though, was really solid, too. I don't think there was, like, a bad actor in this entire movie, like, as far as, like, the main parts and even a lot of the supporting guys.
A lot of the villains.
Were really good. Yeah. The guy that played, what was it? Wormwood or whatever the...
Oh, Wood?
Blackwood?
Blackwood. He was solid. His name totally escapes me at the present time. I apologize, sir. I'm a bloody wanker. But, he was very sound, you know, and then all the people in, like, the little cult that they gave a lot of, like lines too and had like a reverence in the film, they were solid. You know, no one was really super out of place in this movie.
And you know, for the longest time, since I don't have a strong familiarity with Sherlock Holmes, I know it's everything specifically scientific with him, I really did think that they were going to do something mystical, but then they tied it up very well.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that coming.
I didn't see that coming either.
That was ingenious. Now, I'm not familiar with the character enough as far as, like, if this was an original story or based on the...
It's supposed to be based on a comic.
I heard that somewhere, but it's based
on a graphic novel.
I was going to assume a lot of times these movies that are based on multiple novels, like James Bond, some of the movies are based on multiple books, pick and choose. But, like, I didn't see that. I really thought it was going to be mystical. I didn't think... In the last moment, they throw in the plot, and you're like, oh, shoot, but you don't feel gypped.
Yeah, you don't.
At the same time, I didn't feel gypped, like, oh, yeah, well, don't want my money back.
And the way they did it, they just put the pieces together so well, so you were like, it wasn't one of those instances like, for example, in Avatar, when you find out all of these things are happening in Avatar, and then you take a step back, and you start, like, connecting pieces, and you're like, wait, none of this makes any sense. When you take a step back from this film, and you analyze, everything makes perfect sense.
Because they didn't explain it before.
There's total plot contingency. Everything totally fits as a continuity, a flow. And at the end, when you find out all that stuff, what do you do? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Instead of, what? You know? So, and then, I mean, we're not going to, like, blow any parts of the movie, but, I mean, there's obviously going to be sequels.
That's what I was actually going to say. It didn't annoy me that they made a very, very, very obvious setup for a sequel.
Yeah.
And it usually does.
The thing with the sequel, though, here's the thing that goes with good movie making, good storytelling. I wanted to see it because I wanted to see where the story was going. I wasn't, because it's not a special effects movie.
Yeah,
I mean, there is special effects that go, but it's not
cerebral.
It's the opposite of Avatar.
Yeah.
Whereas you could have made this movie 20 years ago and it probably could have been as good because the acting and stuff.
Yeah, we got Gene Hackman and Michael Caine.
Yeah.
You know, it's something like that.
Michael Caine
would have been an awesome Sherlock Holmes, absolutely.
But, Alec Guinness,
yeah.
But like you actually want to introduce that cat because that. Again, my unfamiliarity with the books, that name, the Moriarty name, popping him, like, is he from Sherlock Holmes? So when they kind of slowly introduce him, you want to know what's going on. So it's not even so much, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see a bunch of, you know, special effects and guys running on the Tower of London. You want to see what's going on. And
A couple of podcasts ago, Cynthia Spataro, our senior movies editor, she made a reference to the fact that she was worried that, like, a movie like Avatar would really, like, set Hollywood up in a way that they would rely more on money and, like, good-looking special effects rather than focus on story. I think it's safe to say that after watching this, that, like, the art of quality storytelling is not dead yet.
Yeah.
At least not yet. So.
Mm-hmm. At least it's kind of a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, you can think of a lot of probably more good, bad than good movies that were heavy, special effects heavy, and the special effects have ruined the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, you think, like, late 1990s, early 2000s, even...
Poseidon.
Even cleaner looking CGI wouldn't help because it was just so poorly utilized.
Yeah.
And that really, you could argue that, oh, you know, that'll get fixed, but you know, James Cameron was using CGI effectively 20 years ago. So.
Terminator,
But you're right, and then, you know, movies like this and to a slightly
Titanic.
Different, like Iron Man, Titanic, it's more the storytelling and not to overdo it. Yeah, you don't need blue people running around to tell a story that a third grader, you know, is hearing right now on a Tiny Toons episode. Dating myself there, but...
I'm sorry. Okay, without giving any spoilers, what was your favorite aspect or element of the movie? We'll start off with Olga.
Brett can go first, I have to think.
Alright, so we'll go to Brett.
I was relying on her to think. Favorite element? Let me see. I think again Sherlock Holmes and the kind of mania that weird again kind of like Johnny Depp but not as far. Johnny Depp always plays these kind of manic, really fractured mentally kind of characters, and Downey did that but not to the point of being ridiculous. You know, he wasn't talking to himself and twiddling his fingers and stuff, but he's Robert Downey Jr. He was charismatic, he was different, but he didn't he did everything to the top but not over the top. I think that's what I liked. The character was interesting throughout the film. There's never a point where Sherlock Holmes was boring.
Okay. And while we're waiting on Olga to think,
I'm done.
You sure?
Yes.
You positive?
Yeah.
You want to sing that song again for us, that Irish song?
On the rocky road to Dublin. I don't know the lyrics, but I mean I recognize the lyrics, but I don't remember them.
Okay. What was your favorite part?
I have it on my iPod. I can play it for you guys later.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know the iPod was in the movie.
Yeah, I know, right?
The iPod's going to be in the movie.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the writer didn't take his own intelligence too seriously, didn't elevate it so much that he allowed Sherlock Holmes, his genius, to get outsmarted without really explaining why. Mm-hmm. So it's, I have a big problem with a lot of movies where they set up the protagonist to be ingenious, thereby saying that the writer is ingenious because he really came up with this plan.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, sure, Sherlock Holmes is incredibly clever, but this guy outsmarted him, not really saying how, so therefore the director or the writer is admitting that he has his own intellectual flaws.
Okay, so,
so
the smartest director is the director that's willing to admit they know nothing.
Right. Not necessarily nothing, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The smartest director is not someone who just pats himself on the back and says, I'm such a genius. Look at this ingenious thing I've written.
Yeah.
And everyone must call it ingenious because I know that I'm
After going out with Madonna and marrying her, I don't think Guy Ritchie would ever say that he was smarter than anyone.
But it's still clever, though.
He had a very clever plot.
And I like the fact that, and I also like the dynamic between him and Irene.
Okay.
Irene outsmarting him and not saying how.
Yeah.
So that's another thing.
So he's definitely not the Nietzsche type. He's not a misogynist.
Sure, I like Nietzsche. But what I mean is that he doesn't put himself on an intellectual pedestal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I respect that tremendously.
Okay.
The one thing too, no catchphrases.
Yeah.
He didn't have a fucking catchphrase. I don't know if we can curse on this thing, but
fuck it.
Fuck it.
Oh no.
He didn't say elementary dear Watson.
He did not say it once.
Absolutely.
He didn't say it once. Because they could have went nuts with that. Like, probably 90% of the film portrayal.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
They didn't even try and do it as a joke. See, for a while, Hollywood was like, oh, we'll throw in the catchphrase, ironically.
Like Bob with Wolverine.
And then they started...
Yeah, and everyone clapped.
Yeah.
Oh.
As far as my favorite aspect, this is the second movie that I've seen in 2 days that's based on source material. Like, The Lovely Bones is a movie that's based on a best-selling book, and the thing that made that movie so good is that Peter Jackson was willing to take a step back and not go the 3-hour epic route and just tell a quality story based on a quality book. I think Guy Ritchie did the same thing. He took a step back from the things that made him what he was. You know, the tough guy scenes, the bravado. What was that? There was a movie that he did like 3 years ago, and what's her name was in it? Not Aaliyah.
What was the name of the movie?
I don't remember the name of the movie, but it was about like a hitman and stuff like that. A woman that's like an assassin.
If it is Aaliyah, then it's Romeo Must Die.
No, it's not. It's not Aaliyah. It's another female rapper. It might be Alicia Keys or somebody like that. Anyway, but like this movie and like Snatch and stuff like that. Rock and roller. They depend intensely on the action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to like fuel the story and to take it to the next level. This, the action was kind of like the cherry on top. You wanted the intellect, you wanted the wit, you wanted the charisma, you wanted to be engrossed in 1880 British culture, you know, and he was totally able to give that to you. So again, I think this is like a great step in the right direction for Ritchie, because it says, all right, I get my rocks off by having guys beat the living crap out of each other, but I'm smart enough to understand that my audience doesn't necessarily want or need that for this film.
Yeah. But also wouldn't have made sense with the character.
Yeah.
That I think another reason the movie's entertaining was it was different enough from the stereotype to be engaging, but if you deviate too far from the stereotype too quickly sometimes, then it's like, what am I watching?
Exactly. I mean, a perfect example of that is like Ang Lee's The Incredible Hulk.
Oh.
The Incredible Hulk essentially was not only a bad acted movie, and I mean any movie with Nick Nolte in it after 1995 is a poorly acted movie, but the fact that they made it a thriller. What? We don't want to see Hulk in a thriller, you know?
And it's an emotional role.
It was totally Ang Lee, like, it was directorial masturbation, that film. That's what that was. That was just a way of him saying, oh, I have the rights to the Hulk, I'm the director, I'm going to do whatever I want. And Ritchie was like, you know what, this is a beloved character, let me not screw this up, let me do this the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like, when I first saw, like, the trailer, like, last year, I was like, this looks good. And Downey has been great in, like, the last 3 or 4 movies he's been in. And I think Jude Law is a little underrated at times. He's a good actor.
He's fantastic.
But I saw Guy Ritchie, directed by Guy Ritchie, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. But he pulled it off, and he was pretty solid. As far as the way it was directed, also, too, another thing that I really liked was the cinematography.
Yeah.
It did kind of have, like, that...
Gothic dark feel.
Gothic in the... very From Hell-esque. You did a great job. That's a great like segue. That's a great like mention. Yeah, because it totally looks like From Hell. And like you can say whatever you want to say about From Hell, but as far as like the cinematography is amazing in that movie. So yeah, it totally captured like the ambiance of like late 19th century Britain.
The only thing I can think of that actually did it better, maybe, and it was stylistically different, was Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
But that was all live action. That was, you know, huge productions and flamboyant costume. But it's up there as far as, like, again, eye-catching but not distracting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. The final countdown.
It's the final countdown!
On the rocky road to Dublin.
All right. Scale from 1 to 10, what do you give Sherlock Holmes? Olga.
I would give it at least an 8.5, between an 8.5 and a 9.5, because I saw it
in the
theaters.
That's a big jump. You gotta
give us a
number. I know.
The only thing is, when you see something in a theater, it's always better than when you see it at home.
Okay.
So
if you had to give it a definitive number, though, just one number.
Definitive number.
Yeah.
Well, let's pick the one in the middle. Let's go with 9.
Wow, very high. All right, biggest reason why?
No intellectual masturbation in that respect. He did not pat himself on the back. Remarkable chemistry with the characters. Very, very, very clever and witty. And a really, really fun ride.
Okay. Right.
I have to go with 8. There's good storytelling. Good storytelling, good production values. I guess I'm just picking 8 because I'm not going to say 10 because there's probably only a handful of movies ever that are like a 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, you could throw it in there. I'm just going to stick with 8.
Okay. As far as I go, the thing is, this is based on source material, so I think its genre really isn't, like, wide open, and it's kind of like, you kind of have to rate it based on a scale of how well it reflects the image and the motif of the source material.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, like, a big thing with it. And as far as that goes, I think that would make it a 10, but it's not a perfect movie. It does drag on at certain points. A couple of times I was kind of, like, getting a little agitated. Like, I wanted things to, like, speed up a tiny bit. Not a lot. Like, I think that some of the pacing could have, like, been sped up a tiny, tiny bit. But overall, yeah, I would probably, if I had to base it just by itself and not on the source material, I would say I would give it an 8 as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, as far as, like, staying faithful to, like, the source material and being, Being a representative of what that source material upholds, then I would give it like a 9. So there's no way that any like real fan of like Sherlock Holmes would be disappointed from this movie, and that's why I would say it would be a 9 for a Sherlock Holmes fan. But just for a regular moviegoer that's willing to like spend 13, 12 bucks on this film, yeah, it's an 8. It's a high quality film. It's better than pretty much everything that's out right now. So the only thing that I think that comes relatively close to it or is on the same level as Blindside, because I thought Blindside was a great movie. But aside from that, Sherlock Holmes is definitely like in a league of its own right now. It's definitely better than Avatar.
I like Princess and the Frog.
And, well, me and Brett didn't see Princess and the Frog.
I did. And Ron saw it also, and I liked it too.
So if you guys are interested in hearing Olga and Ron Hatcher's take on that, you can listen to that podcast.
We will have it.
Which will be up soon.
Very soon. So, we might have to redo it because it was 3 a.m. when we recorded the podcast and it was very cold.
It's 3 a.m. You must be lonely. And I said, baby.
Oh, one more thing.
I can't help but be scared of it all sometimes.
As a girl watching
Matchbox 20.
I advise a lot. I find myself thinking I would never date a guy like that, Sherlock Holmes. I find myself thinking throughout 75% of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that
Why?
Was interesting.
He would be bored of you within 2 seconds.
A little too obsessive.
You think so?
Yeah, very, very, very obsessive, very detail-oriented, kind of crazy. Somebody you might want to know, but not somebody you'd want to know intimately.
Okay, so on that note, I think it's a good time to end the podcast. Patrick Hickey Jr., editor-in-chief, reviewfix.com.
Brett Allen, staff writer.
Is that better?
Yeah, it was better.
Ilga Pridman, senior editor.
All right, guys, this is Review Fix at the Cinema. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays!
Merry Christmas, Hanukkah, and stuff!